Are you an early stage founder revolutionizing the future of retail? Then you're in the right place. My name is Sapna Shah, and I'm an angel investor investing at the pre-seed stage in retail tech, e-commerce, marketplaces, and digitally native brands. I'm also the founder of RetailX Series, an ecosystem to help early stage founders in the retail sector. RetailX Series includes events, a YouTube channel, a Slack community, resources for founders, and this podcast. And in this podcast, I interview founders, investors, and experts in the retail space, and we dig deep into the tactics around key topics that early stage founders want to hear about. Welcome to the RetailX podcast. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the RetailX series podcast. I'm your host, Sapna Shah. In today's episode, we'll be talking about how to write great cold emails that can get you funded. Our guest today is Meha Agrawal, founder and CEO of Silicon Saunder. Welcome to the podcast again, Meha.
I'm so excited to be here, Sapna. It's a pleasure.
Great. This is going to be a great conversation. This is a topic that I get a lot of questions on. But before we get into the meat of it, let's start with some background. So can you tell us a little bit more about you and Silicon Saunder?
Sure. So I'm Meha. I'm the founder and CEO of Silicon Saunder. We're a self-care membership experience for modern women. We essentially make daily and proactive mental wellness easy and fun from the comfort of women's homes. And, you know, we focus on a holistic approach to our mental well-being by providing solutions through analog, digital, and experience.
Amazing. So you also have raised a couple of rounds of funding. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So back at towards the fall of 2019, we did our pre-seed round. And then in the midst of the pandemic, around summertime of 2020, we were able to close our seed round. So we've raised about $4 million to date. Our most recent round was led by Redpoint, wonderful investment lead by the name of Annie Kadavi. It's so gratifying, Sapna, to know that, you know, you were the first check in, and we also had a wonderful female investor also lead our round most recently.
Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was going to kind of give that caveat as well. Like, you know, I may be a little biased in this conversation to everything you say, because I am an investor. But okay, let's get into the meat of it. So our topic today is cold emails. And I know you've had success in doing cold outreach to investors in particular. And this, like I mentioned, is a topic that I think a lot of early stage founders are really interested in, because, you know, all they hear is you need a warm intro, you need a warm intro, cold emails will never be successful. And so they're out there trying to, you know, get every intro possible. But you've had success kind of with both, but we're here to talk about kind of the cold outreach. So tell me about one success you've had with cold outreach.
Sure. So I would say that our second investor, so right after you, shortly after you, he happened to be a cold outreach situation. And honestly, by this point, after you had written our first check, I started to get a little bit more strategic on the types of investors I wanted to bring in during the pre-seed round. And I think, you know, for all the founders listening, it's really critical to think about what your values are and what types of not just personalities, but also strategic advice you're looking for in those early days, and being very intentional about those that you bring on to your cap table that early on. And so actually a series of folks right after you, Sapna, were cold outreaches for me. And one of them was the former president of Pinterest and director of monetization at Facebook. And he had started a company that was centered around disconnection and really limiting screen time. So I knew that there was this appetite to solve the emotional health epidemic, but also was aligned in some of the values that were, you know, core and center to Silicon Saunder. And so I reached out to him on a whim. I knew that he was an operator by trade and had started his own thing in a similar space. And so I figured, why not reach out, send him a thoughtful note on why I think he might be a good fit, but I also didn't know if he was an active angel investor, right? It's not like his name was showing up on all the lists anywhere. I was just, you know, under the assumption that he might have some extra cash and cares a lot about the space in which he's in, and figured a cold outreach with the approach being centered around curiosity and exploration on A, do you actively invest? be, here's what I'm doing. See, this is why I think you would be a great fit. And that led to him and his wife being the second check-in. And so I think that is a great example of somebody I didn't even know was an active investor, but kind of try to focus it on the intention behind why he might be an investor and why he might be a good fit for Silicon Sonder.
Yeah. I mean, you really kind of took a flyer on that one, because that's not like reaching out cold to somebody, you know, is prolific on Twitter about all the companies totally. They're investing in and that sort of thing. Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah. So, and you know, why did you decide to do cold outreach there, you know, instead of maybe trying to find a warm intro, or did you not have a warm intro there?
Yeah. I think in that case, I must have had very lukewarm connections, if at all. But in any instance, you know, I do check on LinkedIn to see, do I know anybody that is connected to that person? And if so, how well do I know that person? And I think the reality is, Sapna, most of the people that were the mutual connections in this case and many cases thereafter are more or less, you know, acquaintances, people that I've met in passing, or, you know, a friend of a colleague or a former colleague that I don't keep in touch with. You know, it just feels very inauthentic to reach out on a whim to the middlemen or middlewomen to make those intros, because then I have to explain what we're doing. I have to justify my case twice. And instead I can put that thoughtfulness up front and reach out cold, and then, you know, see if I need an extra nudge here and there. But I think, you know, if you're going to put in that thoughtfulness to justify the need for a warm introduction or a lukewarm introduction, you might as well put that work into a very thoughtful, personalized email to the person directly. And if that doesn't work, you can then kind of reverse engineer who else you can put, you know, who else you can get in touch with. But to be honest, for me, I think it had to do with a mix or a blend of impatience. I like to be in control of the input, even if I can't control the output. And when you request a warm introduction, you don't really know what context is being shared, right? You don't know how strongly they're connected to that other person. They might just be lukewarmly connected as well. And I think the other piece was, it felt a little bit more like soliciting, right? Versus being super honest and transparent about what you're building and why that other person would be a fit. And I think those early days of me cold call reaching out to investors and actually being successful with it, it actually inspired me to be a little bit more thoughtful when I requested introductions. And I know you and I have had this instance as well, where my request for intros are very personalized. So it's easy for you to forward. You almost would feel worse if you didn't forward them, because they're so thoughtful up front. And I think that same concept, being able to do that right off the gate, as opposed to asking people for help all the time, for me, it's the ability to control the timing of it all, right? You don't need to follow up with the middle person. You can just follow up with that person directly.
I love this perspective of, you're going to put all this effort into making it your warm intro email great. Why not put all the effort into directly emailing the person? I think that's such an interesting way to think about it. And certainly not a way I had thought about it before.
It's efficient. I love it. You know, it's just it makes things move a little bit more quickly.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so let's kind of get into the key elements. And I think you a little bit touched on some of them. But, you know, this question has come up in RetailX events in the past is, you know, what are those things that make a cold email great? What are those key elements, and sort of how's that process? And you've shown me a cold email that you've written. And I think, you know, and I've seen the intros, the emails you've written for warm intros, and they are definitely well researched and thoughtful. So can you talk about how you do that? What are the elements, how you do your research, all of those things?
Yeah, definitely. And I think there's a tactical strategy, and then there's also just kind of a authentic layer to it all. And I would say the first step in all of this is to understand your tone and voice and your style. So those that know me, though, know that I have a very, you know, I have a warm demeanor to me, and I like that to be conveyed via email. And so I tend to ignore all the rules when it comes to happy faces and exclamation points. Mm-hmm. And I embed them, you know, like I think at the end of the day, I think of who's reading this email, right? It isn't a robot. It's a human. It's a human with feelings. We're working on a product and experience that has to do with emotional health during a time where the world needs a solution for Silk and Sonder. And so how can I ensure that my vibe or my style lands within the email context? And so with that, I would highly recommend that, you know, whatever company you've started, you are a human too. Before being a founder, you are a person. And so trying to eliminate this desire to know all the things and know all the answers right off the gate and make sure that that's trickled through the tone and the voice. So I'll start with that just to make sure that people don't just use a cookie cutter template and apply it to themselves. If it feels disingenuous, that's something that you need to layer your own authenticity and vibe and style on top of mine. So that's number one is to really be you and be honest about what you're building and where you need the help. I think the elements themselves, I would say the hardest element is the subject line, right? And I remember I would kind of A-B test a couple of different variations on which of those are getting the most bite. And I think I did the vague connecting exclamation point as a subject line. And then the other one was a little bit more tailored to interested in investing in a growing women's self-care startup ? You know, so kind of thinking about what are the subject lines that you want to test and being willing to test those. I tend to like the connecting or the slightly ambiguous subject line, mostly because at the end of the day, you don't know where the other person is at in terms of their investments. They might just be a node to get you to the right next person. And so being open and curious and not so transactional is really key. And so I would encourage people to pick a subject line that isn't, you know, marketing campaign-y and CTA driven. It's much more human, right? You genuinely are connecting with this other person or wanting to connect, you know? So that's kind of the first element. And then I would say when you go into your email body or actually before all of this, to your point, researching, I think number one is you want to make sure that you are targeting the right investors, right? And so if you are looking for investors because you're in the consumer space and they've invested in similar companies that are agnostic to your industry, I think that you want to figure out what is that common thread between you and the investor. Sometimes it'll have to do with what they've invested in the past. Sometimes it has to do with who they are as people, right? So if you know that if your product is in the parenting space and this person is a parent connected to something personal, right? It doesn't always have to be their past track record or their work or whatever. In my case, I was targeting a lot of former founders or former executives. And so one thing that I felt that they could connect with me on is the burnout and the stress and the overwhelm that, you know, building a company kind of comes with and kind of centering it around their accolades. And so I would say, figure out what that common thread is and why you actually genuinely think this person would be a good strategic partner for you beyond the capital. And then stroke their ego. So I think the first or second sentence should be very impressed by XYZ, you know, something that they've done that made you pause and want to actually reach out to them shows that you have done a little bit of research, but that you've chosen them, right? You're not just going through a laundry list. Maybe you are, but they don't need to know that. So I think it's really important that right off the gate, you mention why you're reaching out as well as what it is about them specifically that you're particularly impressed with. And then you kind of go in and be very direct. You know, ultimately, what do you want? You want their capital and you want their strategic advice and you want to see if it's a mutual fit. So you may think they're the right fit, but after meeting them, they might not be. So being open and honest about, hey, this is what I'm building. This is the progress thus far. Are you actively investing? If so, I would love to chat with you and then kind of loop it back to why you think they'd be a good fit. And I think that's the most important thing, you know, especially when you're drowning in the fundraising process and you reach that moment of despair or desperation, like, oh, I'll just take anybody's money. I think it's really important to just pause and think about who actually want the brains behind the money in some instances. And so being thoughtful about who it is, why you want them, and connecting their personal or professional mission with yours and what you're building is most critical. And I would say, don't be afraid to be personal about it. If you read an article where they mention something about their families and it's something you can connect with, or they're from the same hometown as you, it's not stalking. It is being thoughtful. It's being willing to do the research up front to see who this person is beyond their LinkedIn resumes, right? And that is most important. And then I would say the last thing of the email, it should be a very clear ask. So don't just ask, do you want to invest? Because that is transactional and quite frankly, lame. instead, just ask if they're open for a chat. I'll come to you. I will set up the meeting. I will come, you know, wherever they are. And that shows the willingness for you to be open and available. And I think from there, it's easy, right? There's less work for them. It's kind of a yes or no. And yeah, I think those are kind of the main ingredients.
So I love all of that, because all of this detail is great, because what it tells you is you can't write a generic cold email and BCC every investor you've ever heard of and expect to get any result, which I've been on those lists on the other end of it, where I'm like, clearly this is going to a lot of people, or it's coming from MailChimp, which is even worse. Yeah. And then I love the ask part too, that you're talking about, because I think so many founders might do all those original steps well, but then don't have an ask. So I don't know if they're raising money, if they're looking for advisors, if they're just looking for feedback, right? So I think every single step that you've talked about is so important. And the one I think you alluded to kind of early on was that, you know, is this somebody you want on your cap table? And I think that particularly at pre-seed is a really hard thing for founders to say, because it is so hard to raise money. And, you know, maybe you do want to send out very targeted, really great emails, just like the ones you've been discussing, to, you know, hundreds of investors, but probably hundreds of investors are not people you want on your cap table.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad you mentioned that, because I think that's maybe like more important than even kind of what you write is like, are you writing to the right person?
Absolutely. And I think what's really interesting is, in my case, I started to think about the values that I was looking for in investors, right? Much like you would do with a romantic partner, your team, you're always looking for these shared core values. And for me, I would, and maybe Sapna, this is kind of a testament to who you are, who I think you are, but this thoughtfulness, being sharp and bright and kind of a problem solver, as well as having this sense of humility. Like, those are the three things that I actually look for in my team, as well as my investors, as well as vendors that we use. And I think that layer of consistency allows you to expand the investor pool, because instead of just targeting folks that, like you said, are on Twitter or are on the roundups that you see across different publications, it started to make me think, okay, where else are new investors hanging out? Or where are the folks that have made their early money from tech startups and want to actually become an investor? And I started to realize, wow, there's a whole pool of founders who aren't tweeting about how much they're investing here and there, but they have enough money to put into a pre-seed round. Why don't I include them? And so I think you just become really creative with your approach in prospecting investors just by the nature of putting that thoughtfulness up front. What types of values am I looking for, and how am I going to vet that in the first meeting or through an email? I mean, a lot of that comes out through an email, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Could not agree more. Okay, so you told us all the steps it takes to kind of write this email. Let's just talk about the pre-seed round. How many cold emails did you really write and send out, and how many really resulted in any sort of response?
Oh, wow. I wish I had these actual statistics and numbers. And I remember—
I'm putting you on the spot.
No, it's fine. And I remember this process intimately, because everybody told me to have this organized spreadsheet, but I am your classic kind of chaotic founder who's just like, let's just get things done. And so I don't have an actual number, but I do know it was a far higher conversion rate than you might otherwise expect. So even if I sent, I don't know, like 25, 30, like really thoughtful emails, I would say a good like 20 to 30% of them, even more, probably converted. And that's because I was very, very strategic upfront. I didn't see my pre-seed round as a numbers game. I instead saw it as an opportunity to increase the conversion rate. So how do I make the initial list really, really targeted? And so in my case, it might be different from other founders, but in my case, most of my cold call emails always got a response. And then I would say 20 to 30% of them ended up investing.
I mean, that's huge because most emails that get sent to investors do not get a response.
I know. Yeah.
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 Your approach definitely seems to have a better conversion rate for sure.
Yeah. I mean, and I think it does have to do with that personalized first paragraph where you're explaining exactly why they might be a fit. So even if they're not ready to invest, they can come back and say, thanks for your email. I've already invested in the similar space, you know, or they can say, thanks for your kind word. There's this natural desire to respond because the email is so kind, you know?
You know, you're so right because, you know, I rarely get really well-written cold emails like this, but when I do feel like it requires more of a response than even if it's a no, you know, my normal no is this isn't a fit for me, but like if it's a really well-written email, I'll put a little more effort into my response and maybe give it like a piece of advice or something else that might be helpful versus just a no thank you, which is sort of my normal response. So I do think there's something about like, you spent all this time and you kind of look me up and you have all this information, you know, you deserve more than a one sentence back.
Yeah, absolutely.
So interesting. As you were sending cold emails out, you know, if you didn't get a response at all, did you kind of continue to follow up the way you might have with a warm intro?
You know, I did. I would follow up a few times, but with something really generic, you know, just in case you missed this, just wanted to bump this up, you know, something just acknowledging that they might be busy and almost going at it from a place of confidence as opposed to rejection or fear of rejection. And that actually did work. And I can't remember if I have an example of someone who ended up investing after a few follow-ups, but I do know that, you know, one of our leads in our pre-seed round, it did require a couple of times of follow-ups, but they ended up writing the biggest check, you know, in that round. And so it's sometimes worth it. I think people are genuinely busy. I mean, founders should be able to relate to that sentiment the most. You see an email come in that you actually want to respond to, and then it gets buried in your inbox, and then you feel guilty when you don't respond. So there's no harm in following up. Just keep it short and sweet. Don't recap the email. You know, just acknowledge that they might be busy and that you're excited to chat and see if you can propose a time or try to get them closer to a decision.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think it's a good strategy not to like keep repeating all the same information for sure. But I wanted to ask did you ever send a cold email that maybe didn't get a great response or, you know, you got a negative response to it and then later get a warm intro to the same investor?
Ooh, good question. So I've definitely had the situation where I have sent a cold call email and they didn't respond. And then I had some warm emails and then they finally responded because there was enough, you know, buzz around my name. I'm trying to think. I typically didn't position it in a way where I would send the email and then ask for the warm intro after I got a negative response. So I don't have an exact example of that. I've gotten, you know, I've had them say no. And then usually what happens is if somebody else tries to intro us, they might say, oh, she already reached out. I already said no. And then I would hear through the grapevine that happened. Yeah. And so, yeah, I think you just have to kind of be cognizant of the moves and like the timing and sequencing of it, because you don't want to annoy the other side either.
Yeah, for sure. And I think sometimes it happens too that the founder will reach out and then other investors who are in the middle of diligence or maybe have written a check already may happen to reach out to the same investor and say, hey, I'm looking at this, even if the founder didn't request that. And sometimes when you get pinged a few times on something, you're like, wait a second, there might be something here. Let me take a look, even if I wasn't particularly interested the first time. Usually at the pre-seed, I think what that means is the founder is incredibly impressive, which sometimes doesn't come across in email in the same way.
Yeah, definitely. And I think as a founder, it's hard to sometimes toot your own horn, right?
Yeah.
And oftentimes we don't even lead with our own qualities or strengths because we think every founder has it, but you might be a very special founder. And I've had that happen to me where I almost downplay my credentials because I'm obviously a first-time founder, and my investors have had to remind me that no, you need to kind of show up and show that you have the grit and the ability to succeed. So
yeah, don't hide your light under a bushel, as they say.
Exactly.
So have you used cold emails? I mean, here we've been talking about, for fundraising, but have you used cold emails for any other purpose besides fundraising?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think with hiring is another great place to use cold emails. I think cold LinkedIn messages, that's something that seems to get the right traction. And I think what you find is if you take off the pressure in needing to close every candidate or every investor or, every vendor partner, I think you'll find that most often people want to be of help. So any cold email that didn't lead to a, full-time position with Silk & Sonder has often led to a desire to be an advisor or a desire to be helpful in some other way. And I think that is something that I've kind of learned to be a little bit more appreciative of, because as a founder, if you have mind and heart set on doing X, you can kind of ignore the little gifts along the way. And I think you never know where your cold email might lead you. And it's oftentimes planting a seed for a future opportunity.
Yeah, I could not agree more. I think this, this goes back to this conversation that we've been having about just people really appreciate the fact that you took the time to write a personal email. And so you're going to get a little bit more back from them. Even if the answer is no, you might get something else. That alone is a good reason, to really focus on the emails that you write and the research that you do in advance.
Yeah, definitely. And I think with certain cases, right, with candidate sourcing, you don't have to be so personalized the way that you have to be with investors or prospective investors, but the little bit of thought, right? Why do you think this person might be a good fit? Specify the companies, notice something that they've written or talked about. That goes a long way, right? It's more than the average person does. So it's that extra layer that always counts.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think all of this was incredibly helpful and so targeted. And I think you've had such great success with it, but I hope every founder who's listening to this episode is like diligently jotting down notes and crafting their template cold outreach email. Meha, thank you so much for sharing all your advice and all your tips on this podcast episode. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you. Always happy to be helpful where I can.
And thank you all for listening to the RetailX podcast. This is the last episode of season 2, so look out for season 3 in 2022. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to attend a RetailX series event, check out www.retailxseries.com for upcoming virtual events and recordings of past events. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at RetailX Series. You can also learn more about me, find fundraising resources, or submit a pitch deck at www.redgiraffeadvisors.com. Thanks, and catch you next time.